case number 09-1309, New York Regional Internet, Inc., petitioner versus Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, to remove for the petition, paper for petition, this is possibility for the intervenors.
Good morning, counsel.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, I'm William Booth, arguing on behalf of the petitioner, New York Regional Interconnect, who I will refer to as NIRI in this argument. I'd like to reserve 8 minutes for rebuttal or whatever time the court deems is appropriate. This case is critical to the development of transmission and a competitive...
Why is it ripe and why do you have standing?
Your Honor, we have standing because we satisfy these. We have statutory standing because we satisfy the requirements of
What's
section.
What's your present or imminent harm?
Our present or imminent harm,
which can be remedied in this cause.
Our present and imminent harm is the potential veto and denial of incentive rate.
Well, back up. You just gave a very key adjective there. What was the next adjective you used? You started with a P.
I shouldn't say potential, Your Honor.
Yes, you should. Counsel.
It's likely, Your Honor, because the cost-benefit analysis, the NIRI project will not be able to satisfy the cost-benefit analysis.
Then you can go forward, and they can rule, and we can then pass on it. But right now, I'm having a great deal of difficulty finding a ripe case or controversy in which you have standing.
Your Honor, in Maryland Public and Maryland People's Council, the court concluded that the Maryland People Council. The court concluded that. That the public interest standard embodied in the Federal Power Act requires FERC to consider anti-competitive effects in its decision-making process.
You really think that's the issue before us?
I think if
we have to get jurisdiction before we can pass on what FERC did or did not consider. And if you don't have standing or the controversy is not ripe, then we can't decide whether they considered it or not, counsel.
Well, Your Honor, NIRI will suffer competitive harm because it cannot compete on a level playing field with incumbents. If the court doesn't give NIRI standing now, when it does go before the New York ISO and is denied recovery, it's a collateral attack on this order. This court has previously concluded the fact that there could be a collateral attack should be considered in providing standing.
Go ahead, John.
If you don't have standing now, you're not going to be barred later from challenging a rule if and when it's applied to you?
Well, we can, Your Honor, because the commission can claim that we had the right to challenge this order now.
You didn't have the right if the court says you don't have standing.
In Association of Data Processing v. Camp, 397 U.S. 150, a party who is likely to be financially injured has suffered injury in fact, and we are likely to be injured. It is clear that
what the chief judge is saying is that may or may not be true in your mind, but we have to look at what the record is before us, and there is nothing before us indicating that you're a player. You're not there. You're no different than anyone else, as far as we're concerned, than anyone else on the street who says I'm in business and I'm thinking about involving myself in the New York grids. I don't like that rule. It would certainly deter me if I had to think seriously about it. That's the posture in which we find you. If you had an application, that's different.
Well, Your Honor, we did have petitioner.
You withdrew it.
Petitioner did not. Petitioner is still in this case by virtue of the fact that we are here arguing this case. Petitioner in 2005, shortly after the issuance of the Energy Policy Act, began planning this project. Between 2005 and now, it has spent over $20 million. It has proceeded at a State Public Service Commission siting proceeding. It's conducted economic analysis, design, and engineering.
You're not barred from the business. There may be terms that would be more or less advantageous to you that you may or may not get depending upon how it all plays out later on, if indeed you involve yourself in the business. But this is not a case in which you're foreclosed from operating.
Well, I think we are foreclosed, Your Honor, because evaluating the cost-benefit analysis that the New York ISO has filed, which we believe to be anti-competitive, and permitting an incumbent utility to veto cost recovery, which prevents the project from proceeding.
It doesn't prevent the project from proceeding.
Why not?
You can proceed without the recovery, can't you?
Your Honor, no.
As a practical matter or as a legal matter?
As a practical matter and as a legal, well, as a practical matter.
As a practical matter only, so you claim.
Well, because without cost recovery by the commission, there really is no other way to proceed. The only other alternatives, and this is the way incumbent utilities recover their revenue, the only other alternative is to enter into some kind of a bilateral contract with a supplier or a consumer. In this case, the type of project that the petitioner has proposed would not be able to reach agreement with the incumbent utilities that would benefit, because the incumbent utilities have already opposed this project, and that would not be competition. It would be a bilateral contract where only the load approves the terms of Con Edison could control the terms and conditions of that contract. The other alternative is that petitioner could reach agreement with an anchor supplier. But those are the only alternatives to finance this project.
If and when you involve yourself in the process and you're denied that which you seek, that is full participation, you can raise it. You're not collaterally estopped. If you can't raise anything now, at the moment the rule does apply to you, you can challenge it.
In Maryland People's Council, the court concluded that the commission should have considered the anti-competitive effects, not in the subsequent order, but in the initial order, where the commission first implemented
What does that have to do with what I just said? If and when you have standing, you can raise the claims that you're raising. If and when you are actively a participant with constitutional standing, you are not barred from challenging this rule.
Your Honor,
you started to suggest that you would be collaterally barred because the rule would have gone into effect and you could no longer challenge it. That's not my understanding of the law.
In A&R Pipeline v. FERC 771, Fed 2nd 515, this court concluded that the looming threat is sufficient to grant standing. The harm need not be present.
What was the looming in that case? How did it loom?
Well, in that case, it involved a T6 rate. The filing was made at FERC and approved.
Filing was made, and then what?
But the rate wasn't increased. And then subsequently,
The filing was made.
Yes, and so has the filing.
Petitioner got an adverse result in that filing proceeding, right?
In that filing proceeding, this court held that the petitioner had standing.
Yeah.
Because you
have not made any filing. You've not had a filing denied. You have no difference between you and any part of the general public that might think they want to go into the business in New York.
Well, Your Honor, we have made filings. We've made filings.
Is there any filing pending that's been ruled against you, and you're taking up with us the adverse ruling?
The filing of the New York ISO's
proposals. No, have you made any filing?
We've made filings.
No, that is present. That is active. That's live.
That's now pending.
That's live, right now.
It's now pending.
Your Honor, I think that's irrelevant.
No, it's not irrelevant.
I think it's...
Well, trust us, okay?
Okay. I think...
It's not irrelevant. It's absolutely not irrelevant.
The Public Service Commission order does not preclude us from going back to the Public Service Commission and refiling again.
Back. So then go back, and then if you feel you're aggrieved, come to court. Challenge the rule. Say all the things you're saying now, and it will be a posture in which a court can resolve it. We're not in that posture now. You're a wannabe who is not actively, now actively engaged in anything that we can look at. There may be other wannabes out there. They can't come into court and say, you know, I'm kind of dismayed with what's going on over there. Can you clear the decks for me? And then I might get myself involved. That's not the way we work.
I understand, Your Honor, but this is not, we are dismayed. This is a situation where investors have had to withdraw from a Public Service Commission case in
had
order to conserve.
Had to?
Yes, Your Honor.
They were
had
compelled
to,
by law to withdraw.
Literally had to.
They were compelled by law to withdraw.
They were compelled by financial circumstances.
We don't do financial circumstances. We do law. And unless there's a legal invasion of right, which we can remedy in this proceeding.
And if there was, you would have filed it then. That is, that they were unfairly forced to give up on their investment. There was no case then. They voluntarily, they looked at their money and they looked at the market and they made a decision on whatever terms they made it on. But that isn't before us. And it's not a lack of sympathy, it's just we don't have that case. That's not what we do.
If NIRI is not allowed to challenge these orders, then these orders will stand.
Right. And if we're going around in circles, they'll stand unless and until you put yourself in a position, your client puts itself in a position to make the challenge because you have constitutional standing, and then the court will decide the questions you're now raising. So they'll only stand for that one or anyone else who has the right to challenge them.
A subsequent transmission developer that proposes a project in New York will not have the ability to challenge these decisions. It will have the ability to challenge whether the cost-benefit analysis...
No, they'll have the right to challenge the application of the rule to them. And they'll have the right to say, this rule is not fair. And I'm not foreclosed by anything that went on before because I wasn't a participant. And no court has ruled against this. No court has resolved this question. No one took the rules up when they were promulgated, and a court said, yep, FERC did not violate the APA or anything else in promulgating those rules. That would be different. But nothing's, the slate's clean. So if it comes up later and someone says, this rule's crazy, it's unfair, that issue would be resolvable.
Your Honor, the presence of these proposals will chill transmission development in New York.
No doubt about it. And I can't tell you the thousands of situations in this country in which people are being chilled and courts don't have jurisdiction.
Particularly the regulatory context. Anybody considering a major investment in a major enterprise is going to review the regulatory context and to a greater or lesser degree be chilled by it. We're not in the business of keeping investors from being chilled and being influenced in the use of their money. You've got to have a current consequence of the act of the respondent that we can remedy in this action of law, and that you're not there yet.
I think the current act is respondent's approval of patently anti-competitive practices.
They're making rules that you don't like.
In Wabash,
we're making rules that you don't like, but there, as Judge Edwards suggests, for better or for worse, that happens all the time. That there are rules that chill the decision of investors as to whether or not to go into a particular business or go forward with a particular project, and that's not our business until it gets to a ruling of the commission that's adverse to you.
In this court in Wabash Valley Power Association v. FERC 268 Fed 3rd 1105 held that a competitor crying foul is sufficient to challenge anti-competitive effects.
Yeah, that's the other case you cited a while ago also is the same kind of case where you have a competitor that has had a beneficial ruling, that there is then competitor standing on the allegedly disadvantaged competitive regulated entity. But you do have a ruling. You may not have been the party in the ruling, but the ruling on somebody else's rights has changed the balance of competition. Isn't that what we were holding there in that case? That's a different issue. There was a ruling.
And there's a ruling in this case, Your Honor.
No, there's a rulemaking. I mean, they've set up the regulatory scheme, but they haven't ruled in somebody else's favor in a way that hurts you. They've just set up the scheme as to how it's going to be done. And for all we know, you went and applied, you might get what you're looking for. You might not. You might get part of it. But it's not. We don't know that yet.
But when a rule is approved and it has obvious anti-competitive effects, doesn't that provide
automatically has some anti-competitive effect? You got to comply with the rule. You're therefore not as free to compete as you would be if there were no such rule. Our jurisdiction just can't be based on that, counsel, can it?
Respectfully, Your Honor, I have to disagree. I think this is a scenario where the court does have jurisdiction. There is a looming threat. There's little doubt that the project will get vetoed. What the court is concluding here is that the petitioner will have to spend another $5 or $6 million to get to the point where the cost-benefit analysis rejects the proposal. And then, by some stretch of the imagination,
if it does reject that proposal,
Your Honor, production cost savings will not justify a transmission project.
Then, counsel, tell it to the commission, and if that's where they come out, then you can come ask us for relief.
And that's what we've tried to do, but this is.
Well, you haven't gotten there yet, though. You haven't tried it yet. There's been a rulemaking, but you don't have any application to your client. We don't have any proceeding in which you have standing. Certainly don't have a ripe proceeding.
Again, the public interest standard embodied in the Federal Power Act requires FERC to consider anti-competitive effects in its decision-making process. If this court can conclude that the voting proposal and the cost-benefit analysis are anti-competitive, unduly discriminatory, then the court, I believe, does have a jurisdiction to deal with it. The public interest standard in the Federal Power Act requires FERC to consider.
That's positive law. That's substantive law.
Yes, sir.
Before we can apply that rule, we have to have a case or controversy. And before we can have a case or controversy, we have to have a party withstanding. And we have to have, in an administrative context, a final adjudication, a final decision from which the petition can be taken. And that's your problem. If you get to the substantive law, you may or may not win. But on the first hurdle is your problem. Well,
Your Honor, this court and the Supreme Court have found standing when Order 888 was challenged. That was a rulemaking. That was a final rule. No petitioner could allege an injury at that point.
As I recall, they alleged lots of injuries at that point, counsel.
But they were forward-looking injuries. It's the same scenario that we have here.
With respect to regulated parties, in the rulemaking context, yes, you can file, if you participate in the rulemaking,
and you're a regulated party.
You're a regulated party. That is someone who meets Article 3 standing. Yes, Abbott and all of those cases established that you can have pre-enforcement challenges with respect to rulemakings if you're a party. But someone just walking off the streets from Starbucks comes in and said, oh, was there a rule? I'm going to go in and challenge it. Merely because it was a rulemaking doesn't allow Mr. Starbucks to come in and challenge the rule.
The rules in 888 affected the primary conduct of the parties bringing the petition. And believe me, there were a lot of them. I think we moved the case up to the big courtroom upstairs because we had so many interested parties in that one.
And so the same analogy would apply to challenges to Order 2000.
The primary conduct is not here. What is it that you are doing that rule is affecting. In 888, it affected the primary conduct of the regulated entities. Are you a regulated entity yet?
Well, it's a chicken or an egg argument, Your Honor, because by preventing the petitioner from being able to construct transmission projects and get cost recovery,
no one is
it prevents
you from submitting an application which can be acted on.
I agree, Your Honor. I agree. Nobody's preventing us from, but we have submitted a request for interconnection. We've gone through the SRIS study process.
Are they now pending?
Are these pending things with respect to which action has either been taken or you're waiting for action to be taken on?
No, the SRIS was approved. The study was approved.
Right.
By the management committee and by the New York ISO board. So
Well, you can't petition from that decision then if it was approved, right?
There's no petition from that decision, Your Honor.
So is there a decision about anything your client is doing that is now before us? You don't have anything now pending, do you?
Only the appeal of these orders, which prevent us from proceeding with a project.
Didn't you just tell Judge Edwards they don't prevent you? The orders are not preventing you from going forward, are they?
Your Honor, no reasonable investor is going to proceed with this type of a scenario.
We'll hear from the government. Your time is up. We'll give you back 2 minutes for rebuttal if you need it.
Good morning. May it please the court, Holly Kafer for the commission. There may be a few things that I can add to what's already been said this morning. Of course, I would agree with Judge Edwards that NYRE is simply not a player in the transmission market in New York at this point, which is what they need to be in order to have standing. In particular, I can point the court to El Paso Natural Gas 50 Fed Third 23 from 1995. Where the court basically found that there's no such thing as potential competitor standing. You have to be a competitor, not just trying to be a competitor. One thing that's been discussed is whether participation in this litigation is enough. Of course, we'd submit that it's not enough.
Well, that's very well established that participating before a non-Article III tribunal doesn't give you Article III standing. Right. I'm curious as to why FERC didn't raise this in the brief.
Right. At the time we received the case.
Want to have your cake and eat it too? Seriously.
No, Your Honor, no.
Well, I mean, it's perplexing that it's not raised because it was almost as if, well, maybe we can sneak this by and get the court to give us a positive ruling and put this behind us.
That is certainly not the case, Your Honor.
I wasn't mean to disparage.
You might have been congratulated.
I'm not that clever. No, we just didn't feel that we had sufficient facts about the current status of NYRE's pursuit of the project. Obviously, upon briefing by the intervener and NYRE on reply, it's become very clear that they're simply not pursuing the project in any form except this one, which, again, is not enough.
We hope you will take close looks at jurisdictional issues before you close out your briefs.
I appreciate that, Your Honor, and I think that at a minimum it would have been a good idea to raise at least the fact they hadn't established standing in their initial brief if we had a question. So I apologize for that. The last thing that I would point out is that, of course, and this has been discussed, the potential for a preclusive effect in the future is also not enough to confer standing, and if it helps, that's in Alabama Municipal Distributors Group 312, Fed Third 470 from 2002.
Good. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Unless my colleagues have further questions. Mr. Saltarelli, do you need to be heard?
May it please the court, Your Honor. Joseph Saltarelli, on behalf of the interveners, I appreciate the opportunity to address the court at the indulgence of FERC. I believe the standing question has been thoroughly vetted and the citations that have been provided. I would add one more citation in response to the argument that NYRE has made that it is irrelevant. It's at page 19 of their reply brief that the project is no longer alive, and that would be the Entergy case, which is a case by you, Judge Santel, 391 F3rd 1240, very close parallel there where there were challenges based on rules by FERC regarding interconnection agreements, which were canceled prior to the time they got to this court. And basically, this court ruled, consistent with what has been said before, that there's no live controversy until those agreements are in place. I would only want to mention one thing about the project status. There is absolutely no basis to say that this project is alive. NYRE not only withdrew its application before the New York Public Service Commission, which was accepted by the Public Service Commission with prejudice, they ruled that NYRE would have to start the process entirely from scratch. So there is no pending process. NYRE also withdrew the project from the NYISO interconnection queue. A comment was made that it had been placed on it, but that was withdrawn and is no longer on the queue as of the same time that the application was withdrawn in April of 2009. Unless the court has any further questions of the interveners. Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, give him back 2 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Thank you. In Maryland's People Council, the court concluded that FERC is the protector of consumer interests. It must consider promptly the impact of discrimination. In that case, as in this case, FERC has brushed aside the petitioner's arguments despite a complex record identifying all of the incentives that incumbent utilities have to prevent competition in New York. FERC's decision must be based on relevant factors. FERC's decision wasn't based on the relevant factors in this case because FERC did not consider all the incentives and the anti-competitive effect of a cost-benefit analysis proposal that will reject major transmission projects. And if it is able to pass the cost-benefit analysis, that can be vetoed by a self-interested competitor, that is the incumbent utility. FERC must weigh antitrust policy. That's Northern Natural Gas Company. It is clear that antitrust concepts are intimately involved in determining whether an action is in the public interest, and therefore FERC must weigh antitrust policy. Given the incentives incumbent utilities have to act anti-competitively, the antitrust implications should be considered now. If these rules stand, there is little likelihood that they'll ever be reviewed, because investors are not going to invest $20 million in a transmission project knowing that it can be vetoed by its competitors. This is inconsistent with what the Energy Policy Act, what Congress directed, that FERC is required to provide incentive rates for the construction of transmission irrespective of ownership. These proposals provide a tool that allows incumbent utilities to foil competition. And that is inconsistent with what Congress required in the Energy Policy Act. Congress recognized that for the last two decades, there has been inadequate investment in transmission, that transmission is required to connect low-cost generation.
Your 2 minutes are up, if you'd finish your sentence, please.
It's inconceivable that the New York ISO can develop proposals that foil Congress's intent in the Energy Policy Act of 2005. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel. Case is submitted. Give us recess.